That was Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops for Standing in the Shadows of Love. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, a grassroots talk show that is on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and charting a new course for America. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years as your United States Senator for the District of Columbia, but now I'm stepping into the light, and together with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because it's what happens in the shadows that changes the world. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to bring forth the expert so that you will have the information you need to make good decisions, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. And today, we are pleased to be able to interview India May. India is a brave woman who stood up recently at a meeting. You've probably heard about this at a town hall meeting with United States Senator Joni Ernst, and spoke truth to power. So let's have her on the show and let's find out what she's all about. India, welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for being with us. And thanks to Liberty for also being with us. Let's start right at the beginning. When you stood up at this community meeting, that's such an unusual thing to do. Let me tell you who this woman is. She's a librarian. She's a registered nurse. She's an activist. She's a mom. And she's running for the legislature. She'll tell us about this in Iowa. But it's such an unusual thing, especially for librarians, India, because I'm married to a librarian. And my wife likes to help. I know what librarians do. They like to help people. They don't like to be on center stage. So what is it that motivated you to do this, to stand up at a meeting and confront the United States Senator?
Well, my first town hall that I attended this year, I was pretty surprised. I did not expect some of the talking points. I went to visit with Sandy Salmon, my state senator, and Charlie Thompson, my representative for my district. And I did not record, and I did not expect what I was walking into. I went to talk about libraries and the censorship bills that were in the works, and just how egregious they were and unfounded, because our libraries are being sort of attacked in this way. This narrative is being spun about us that we're giving inappropriate materials to children and that we are harming them. And that's just not true. There's no evidence of it. So I went to defend libraries, and I didn't realize that they would double down on this rhetoric even when I presented evidence. And so that kind of got me started going to town halls quite a bit. It's been quite a new hobby of mine. I have two new hobbies, and that's attending town halls and live streaming them and protests. So I've joined a couple of organizations that all really did wonderful. There was the North Iowa Fights Back group that brought people in to ask really thoughtful and truthful questions at this Joni Ernst Town Hall. And I live streamed the whole thing, and you can see the question was asked in a very direct way. And Joni was not very forthcoming with direct answers. And a lot of the talking points have just been lies. Just like against the library, they're also attacking things like Medicaid and Medicare and SNAP benefits, and we need to defend them. So normally I'm rather introverted, as a lot of our librarian folks are. I just got done with the library director's board meeting, and they're just every day. I don't know how to describe them. They're just lovely women, you know?
They are lovely women.
But we have all come across some legislation that's been harmful to us here in Iowa. So I just want to bring that to people's attention. And this was one way to do it.
Well, and you know, before I let my brilliant co-host say something, I just want to add that I watched this TikTok video or Instagram video, I don't know where it is, of you recording this, and you can hear you in the background as she's talking, saying, "That's a lie. No, that's not true. That's a lie." And you could tell, I mean, I think it's a great video because you can tell that's your reaction. It's not something that was pre-programmed or, you know, or scripted. You're just reacting to what this woman is saying. And of course, we're doing this in Washington right and left now. We're going, "What are they talking about? They're not eating our dogs and cats. They're not, you know, I mean, it's just crazy." Liberty.
So first, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. You know, I think it's absolutely wonderful what you're doing, and especially as an introvert. You know, I don't know if I'm that introverted, but my sister definitely is. Being able to use your voice for something so powerful, you know, it's not for you, it's for the people who you're supporting. And I think that's why you're wonderful for this candidacy. My question to you is, you know, you're really in the heat of the moment, in the web of the spider, let's say, I just made that one up. What do you think, you know, if you do get this position, what do you want to do first? How are you going to help these libraries? How are you going to help with Medicaid? You know, what is, do you have a plan? Like, what would you like to start off with?
Well, there's so many ways that we can protect vulnerable people and services that keep them alive and well. And so anything that comes my way that can do those jobs, I will support, of course. Just like through my library, I collect all of these community resources and I share them. Anybody who has a need, I do my best to fill it. And that's my strategy. But if you want to see my action plans, since these topics are huge and we could talk just for hours on each one, you can visit my website. I have my stances and a 5-point action plan for healthcare, for education and libraries, for agriculture, environment, all of these things on my website. That's mayforiowa.com. If you want to see my strategies and my priorities and plans, that's the place to do it.
But it's M-A-Y for Iowa. The first time I talked to Indy on the phone and she told me it was May for Iowa, I thought she said Made for Iowa. And I thought, man, that's a great slogan, M-A-D-E, Made for Iowa. And I kept on trying to email her it, M-A-D-E for Iowa. And then I looked it up and I said, May for Iowa, of course, but an idiot I am.
Well, so don't copyright that because I might use it.
No, absolutely. I think it's great. And you know what? I just got to tell you, you couldn't have a better last name from a guy that does PR. You know, they write, there's poet, Shakespeare writes about, you know, says, rough winds doth blow the rosy May, buds of May. There's songs written about the month of May. I mean, it's just, it's a great name. You can do 100 variations on your name. But
there's one person, if I could choose any celebrity endorsement, I'm going to say it now, manifesting this, I would choose Tyler Childers. He's a wonderful advocate. Check out his, it's a music video, In Your Love, beautiful song and such a meaningful, awesome, emotive music video. But he also has a song called Lady May. And I'm like, oh, he wrote a song about me and he doesn't know it yet.
There you go. Well, contact him. Maybe he'll let you use it. I mean, that would be great. And you know what? I mean, this is something that bothers me. And I don't know if you have any insight into this. But, you know, when candidates use words like love, you know, people for some reason blow it off. Like they see it as, I don't know, too sentimental or And I just don't understand it. I don't understand it because if there's something we need in politics, I can tell you, I've been in Democratic politics for almost 50 years. We need more love. You know, that's something that really is seriously lacking. So why politics? I mean, you're about to get into a street fight. I mean, politics, right? It's a contact sport. You seem like the nicest person in the world. So, you know, why run for public office? Why is this important to you?
Well, I'm really blessed. I have a lot of privilege. I'm in a position in my life where I have the bandwidth to do this. I do have a child and this will work out with our schedule if we're blessed enough to take this position of leadership. I have the support of my family and my community. It's been just really, really beautiful. And I keep coming back to, if not us, then who? And if not now, then when? We really have to take critical action. Even people who don't particularly love positions of authority, like myself, and people who are introverted and public speaking is like the worst thing that could ever happen to us. I get it, but it is time to override anxiety, and it's time to make things happen, move mountains, so that we can right some injustices that are happening.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you say all the right things. You say all the right things, because that's really the most important thing, I think, in politics, is caring for the people around you. And I think so many politicians forget that. It's not about you, it's about them. And, you know, you've had a life of service already. You're a registered nurse. Nurses are the most trusted profession in America, and they should be. You know, I'm a diabetic. I know a lot of nurses. I know a lot of doctors, unfortunately. And I can't, you know, of the 100 nurses that I've had to deal with in my lifetime, I could count all the ones I didn't like on one hand. I mean, you know, they're just amazing people, and they really care about the people that are around them. That's what it's all about. So I think you're the perfect candidate. You know, I'm trying to talk my wife into moving to Iowa so we can vote for you. Go ahead, Liberty.
So, you know, as a young person, what this really makes me think about is about how right now, this is the first in-person need for revolution and movement that I've seen. And I think what's most unfortunate to me is that there, I don't see it. I don't see any poster children. I don't see a Martin Luther King Jr. I don't see somebody who wants to rise up and lead people in the right direction. That's why I think what you're doing is even more beautiful, because you come from a story of needing change. You're a nurse and you're a librarian, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. And so there's a necessity in that, you know. My question to you is, for someone who works so closely to that environment, who has really the power to lead the movement that we need right now, which to me, you look like a princess. You talk as if you're Cinderella. You can tell that you're coming from a place of love, which as we've discussed is what's most important. How do you think the people of Iowa, how does this need, which you work in this every day, how does this need encapsulated for them? You know, how do you see them suffering? How is it directly affecting them?
I didn't mention I also work part-time as a death investigator for my county alongside the sheriff's office. So I work just under the medical examiner. I go and assess any death that occurs not under a physician's care. And I document it, and I make connections for the family with funeral homes, organ donation, sending people to autopsy, these kind of things. So I get a really firsthand glimpse at some preventable deaths on a regular basis. And we have a little bit of a crisis here locally that I really, really want to address. I've worked in the past as a mental health nurse, and that was in Kansas, where we had quite a lot of resources and quality care for long-term care for mental health patients. And we just don't have those resources here in Iowa. We're rated lowest in the nation for mental health care, and we have quite a high addiction rate. And these are all things that we could absolutely prevent with, like you said, a little bit of love. We have loving, wonderful people. I don't want to say that these things don't exist. We just really need to give them the opportunity to do their stuff. We've got mental health outreach that focuses on preventing harm and harm reduction. And we've got wonderful vocational services that have just been slowly eroded by bad legislation over time. And so by being empathetic and understanding that you can't punish someone into mental health, you will only add to a body count of preventable causes. This is what we need desperately. I think it's a silent crisis. And so any reservations about how good I am or worthy of this position are suddenly irrelevant. And I want to share that message with people who might be listening in and they care deeply, and they have a big galaxy brain is how I describe it, but a competent professional ability, a stature in the community to really consider running for office. Now is the time. We absolutely have to help people feel empowered to do the right thing and not punish people for having trauma and to be empathetic and kind. I hope that makes sense.
It does.
It makes so much sense, India. And I got to tell you that my co-host told me that on the first, said that to me on the first show. And he keeps on coming back to me. That's a problem that we have now with the Trump administration, for example, is that these people lack empathy. They just, and this is a problem in politics. You know, congressmen have to apply for their job every 2 years, and they have to go to everybody that has the right to vote for them. I mean, just imagine having a job and you not only have to reapply for it, but you're, everybody that you've worked with over the past few years has a right to tell you whether you can go on or not. So it's very easy to become insular. It's very easy to care about yourself more than you care about the people around you. And again, I think you say all the right things. But let me ask you, you know, one of my favorite movies in the world is a movie called The Music Man, and it's all about politics. It all takes place. And the whole thing takes place in a fictional city called River City, Iowa. And the first thing the guy says,
Mason City, Iowa.
And he, you know, this con man comes into Iowa, and the first thing they say to him is, these are hard-nosed people. If they don't have it, they don't want it, you know. And so how do you deal with that as a lovely, nice mom, nurse, librarian? How do you deal with the hard-nosed Iowans? Are they really hard-nosed? Because I know there's another thing called Iowa Nice, and I've experienced that. They are very nice people.
The joke is that, yeah, Iowa Nice is sort of a front-facing kindness, that they'll be hospitable, and then they'll run and talk about you behind the back. It happens. It's, yeah, part of being in a rural community, and that's no shade. I have seen true Iowa kindness, and I think we should rename it to Iowa Kind, because there are just people who will give you the shirt off their backs. And I've seen such a rally of support that I did not expect, honestly, from my local area. And we have really formed these wonderful groups, and we're doing outreach to try to, how do I word this? To combat these preconceived notions, because there are people who don't understand and they reject what they don't understand. They were raised in that way. And to be understood, you have to just be vulnerable. It's kind of a paradox to reach out to people who have never experienced an LGBTQ+ person and to say, you may know me, even if you don't understand or like or wish well for me, you are permitted to know me. That's the first step in overcoming, is exposure. And we see that with cults. Deprogramming people from cults involves exposure to what they fear and hate. And little by little, building rapport with these folks, they find out that we all want the same things in life. We all have been disenfranchised and harmed by the same people. And so we can, instead of being left and right, we can just see the bottom coming up, rising up to the top. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And you know what? That's the most powerful thing when you're running for office, is to connect with people. And I think that's very often the problem, is just like you say, that, you know, when we get right down to it, we have more in common than we have, you know, in opposition, right? We all love our children, so we connect with our children, right? We all love our families, our neighbors, our, you know, that, I don't care if you live in New York City or you live in Iowa, but, you know, that's a truth for all of us. So connecting on that level is really, really important. And it's also important to get elected. Liberty.
You know, that was so well said. That really was a beautiful way to put it. The art of vulnerability and how far it can get you. And I think the hardest thing that we're seeing right now is that's the value of that has completely been diminished. You know what I mean? It's not about make America think again, make America unite again. It's about make America great again, right? Which in itself is a dichotomy of, and I talked about this last time, so I don't want to keep this short, but it's a lack of pride. It's a lack of appreciation. Who wants to be vulnerable when they aren't proud of what they are, you know? And it all ties together to me. And so my question to you is, you know, you mentioned that a lot of these people have these different perspectives when it comes to how to go about being understood, right? How a lot of people feel that the reason that there's such a big disconnect is that because they don't see eye to eye. How are you trying to get these people to understand you? You know, that's what we're trying to do on this podcast. How are you opening yourself up to vulnerability? You know, how are you rewiring, not rewiring, but enlightening, opening perspectives to something that has been so rigidly ingrained and reinforced even? You know, that's a really hard job.
Well, I think the hardest thing is having the hard conversation, that first conversation where we tell people, you've been lied to a lot. And even if you voted for Trump, and I wouldn't vote for Trump, we came from the same place. Like you said, love for family and this deep care that life should be better for our people. And that is the bridge between us. But Donald Trump is a liar and the administration is lying a lot. And that's the hard truth. And I have made this bridge. I actually have I have a veteran friend who was very staunchly Republican. And when we talked about Donald Trump's treatment of veterans, his statements about them being suckers and losers, and their being services are removed from them, the VA is suffering, and all of these changes have been to the detriment of our military. And that is just unacceptable. And I just wish for better for our veterans. I also have to help my veterans in the community that aren't tech savvy, since a lot of VA offices closed. They aren't able to coordinate their care in person, so they're having to do it online, and they really are struggling to use their platform, and there's a lot of complications. So I advocate to make sure that they can get their medical appointments set up, things like that, through my library.
Not on purpose.
Was that? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I truly believe that we are red taping people to death, literally. And that's unacceptable. But I understand how hard it is to break an allegiance to the party that you believe has been in support of you this whole time, but they've just been lying. So this veteran friend of mine, he's very close to me. I do some housekeeping for him and make sure I check on him a lot. And he comes to my library all the time just to talk. And we have built this rapport that he was comfortable. He gave me his MAGA hat. He bought it in 2016. I actually have it up here. One second. Yeah. This is his dusty old MAGA hat. And he's done. He's done with MAGA. And so I keep it as a reminder that it's not about I fixed him or anything. He came to that conclusion by building a rapport with me. And that means everything to me.
Yeah.
So I just want to help people feel comfortable. You can take your Trump flag down when you're ready. It's okay. And we will still embrace and understand that you were lied to, and there's no shame in that.
Yeah. That's so beautiful.
Absolutely. And if there is any shame in that, it's not on you. It's on the people that are telling the lies, you know, and that is so true. And I'll tell you a quick story. I went to Nebraska to testify about a bill to support Washingtonian, and the Republicans are very much against this, but luckily I was in speaking before the Veterans Committee, and there were 40 veterans who had come in the meeting room, and they took up the whole meeting room, actually, to speak about a bill that was up after my bill. And the first thing I said was, Washington, D.C. has 40,000 veterans that don't have a vote in the Congress. And with that, the Republicans stood up and walked out, because all the veterans went, oh, you know, they made this this roar, like, how could that be? And so, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head, because if there's anybody that will have your back, it's veterans. And you're absolutely right about it. It's I have a neighbor that said to me, he was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. And I said, how in the world can you support this man with what he said in that cemetery, that these guys were suckers, these dead veterans were suckers and losers? And you know what he said to me? He said, they take that out of context. And I said, okay, so what is the appropriate context for calling a dead soldier a sucker or a loser? You know, and he didn't have anything to say. I don't think I swayed him, but, you know, you're right. That's exactly what we have to do. We just have to stand up. And I think that Senator Ernst showed the level of compassion and empathy these people have for Americans when she responded to you that we all die. I mean, what a thing to say, right? Especially to a nurse, especially to somebody that's trying to stand up to save the medical benefits of the people that in her community. So what's the next step for you? Got a website, seen it. It's cool. Everybody should go there and take a look at it. You know, we're not going to tell you to vote for India. We're just going to say that we would do it if we had the chance. And you should go look at her website. So what's the next step? Got the website. Are you fundraising? Are people responding to you?
We are fundraising. We've got an Act Blue set up. So if you feel comfortable donating, we're also taking volunteers. And you don't have to live in the district to volunteer. We would absolutely love the help of artists and musicians and graphic designers and like cool people all over the world. If you feel moved by this movement, please reach out. We are getting an in-person space. I'm so excited. We'll have an office where we will have some affordable printing, and we'll do pizza parties for volunteers. But I'm really hoping to use this location in district, because we don't have a sort of regular free meal in the community right now. I'm hoping to host something like that so that I can meet with constituents and talk with them and learn what their issues are that they'd like to have input on. And I can learn so much from being face to face and do outreach with the North Iowa Impact Team and the Iowa Food Systems Coalition and all these really awesome places that are in this area, but they're in the bigger towns, and we're ready to take it more rural. So looking forward to that. So we can really use these resources to, yeah, I'll be campaigning, but I'll also be doing some real good in the community that we truly do need. Yeah. So that's what I'm coordinating behind the scenes right now. And stay tuned, because there's a lot of exciting stuff coming up with these advocacy groups. I want to give out a little shout out to the Insufferable Wenches of Iowa. They are out of Waterloo, and we've been collaborating with them. And I'm just so proud of all the advocacy work they're doing. Also, the Progressive Democrats of America. I run the Iowa chapter TikTok account. So if you want to catch me there, that's pda.iowa on TikTok. And we are trying to help these newbies that have never done politics before, and especially young people and progressive people, get into the position, because the Democratic Party overlooks districts like mine. We're very red, we're very rural, and so they don't fund these kinds of races. And I've been told just not to expect their support, which offers us some autonomy, and we can grassroots everything and just have our own campaign on our own terms. And that's really exciting. So stay tuned.
Well, I've been a member of PDA for very, very many years, and it's a great organization. And I'd like to give you some advice, but it seemed to me that you're doing everything right. So I really don't have anything to say other than keep going. Liberty?
You know, I think it's really interesting that you're not only taking this campaign as a moment to really spread your voice on what needs to be addressed, but you're actually taking this campaign to change people's lives. You're saying, now that I'm getting attention, I'm starting now. You don't need to give me the victory yet. I already know what needs to be done, and I'm going to start now. And that's really inspiring. You know, that's more than many, many people do. That's how politics should work. People should be in positions of authority, as you mentioned, to represent the people, not the other way around, right? And so it's really reputable that you're already taking it hands-on, you know, really proud of you and your team as someone who looks up to, I would love to run for Congress someday. So genuinely inspirational. But my
question,
my question to you is, you know, and I don't want to make it sound pessimistic, but what is one of the greatest struggles that you're facing right now during this time? You know, it seems that you really got the show on the road. You have your first in-person place. You're getting support from all around. What is an issue that you think is on the top of the list right now that needs to be addressed, whether it be for your campaign and, you know, getting the message out there?
Well, there's been some misunderstandings in the community. Because I do protests and advocacy work, I think they're picturing that I'm bringing LA riots over to our neck of the woods. And I just have to reassure everybody, we are hosting a No Kings protest. That's June 14th at 6 p.m. at the Charles City Arts Center, if you're in this area of Iowa. And we're also doing a canned food drive. But I want to reassure everybody that these rural areas and our little group is just profoundly positive. We listen to everybody. We are open. It's a public event. Come down and see if you have any misgivings, thinking that we're going to be violent and hide our identities. And we don't need to do that. We're very privileged to host a protest that's just going to be bubble machines and a food drive. So everybody can be reassured that this is not intended to be divisive. I have had people contact the police about this because they have concerns. So I just want to reassure people that these advocates are really just trying to make the world a better place for everyone. Even the people that you might not like or understand, they deserve to be protected and have a good quality of life. And you can always contact me directly with any concerns, but internet harassment is unnecessary. Let's keep it civil. I appreciate feedback. So open minds, open hearts, open doors here.
Well, the only piece of advice I can give you is to have as much contact with the public as you can, because you come off as a very genuine, one of the most genuine people that I've met in politics. And I've been in politics for 50 years. And you have a new friend in Washington, D.C., who's been a DNC staffer, an elected official. You know, I've done everything you can do in the Democratic Party. So if you need somebody to go down to the DNC and prod them a little bit and say, send this woman some money, I'm happy to do it on your behalf. Liberty and I are actually working right now, as we speak, to get the first Native American woman ever elected to a leadership position at the DNC. And we hope that's going to happen. So, you know, we'd like to help you too. But let me ask, how does your family feel about this? How does your daughter feel about this? Are they all supportive of what you're doing?
I'm very lucky. My family has been nothing but supportive. I would never do this if it weren't for my daughter. She feels very strongly about LGBT plus rights. And she's 11, and she just has this, I think children are just the purest, I swear. Why are we battling with this? Everybody should love everybody. Everybody should be allowed to live how they want, free of discrimination. So yeah, I wish this world was like that for you and your whole generation and your kids. If I'm lucky enough to be a grandma someday, everybody deserves a quality of life that is free from harm. Everybody deserves their needs to be met and to be met with kindness in this world. And so her ethos, her plan for this world is to live in this paradise, and I want to make it happen. And so I check in with her. This is a big life change. It's a big risk, of course, and I am prepared for anything that comes my way. But she's been nothing but absolutely supportive and driven towards this mission too. And she's going to be a future professional artist. I swear, she could be a professional artist now. She's so talented at so many different media. I'm just so proud of her. I got to brag on her all the time, because as a mom, it's the highest honor to raise a really great, cool person who believes in the rights of everyone. And she's my number one inspiration.
Well, you know, it's always amazed me that you can take 10 8-year-olds who have never met and put them in a room, and within 5 minutes they've all bonded, they're all running around, they're all, you know, they all have the, I don't know why we can't do this as adults, you know. I think maybe we should listen a little more to the children. I think in the Bible phrase where they say a child will lead them, I think, you know, we should learn more from kids, you know. But
you can see it in my library any given Monday. Our library hosts a story time every Monday at 10, and instant besties. Absolutely. And even if they don't get along, even if there's conflict, there's this understanding and acceptance of each other's humanity that is just beyond their cognitive abilities. It's just, it's in their spirit. And it's beautiful. And I do think that adults need to take a page from kids' books.
They really do.
You know, that's a really beautiful way that you put it, that adult needs to take a page from kids' books. I completely agree with you. And it's so interesting, because I feel like as a librarian, maybe you feel similar. Trump is painting a story. He's writing his own book, right? And to me, you know, you mentioned how the LA situation right now, whatever we want to label that as, how it's causing a lot of, you know, negative opinions around your campaign, because they're like, oh, is this what she's going to do? Is this what type of protest No Kings is? You know, do you think that he took, or, you know, as a storyteller, as a reader, I'm a fellow reader myself, doesn't it kind of seem like he took advantage of an opportunity? He took one protest and wrote a whole story about how terrible it was, added extra production to make it really explode, and now really painted a story to the United States that people who are rising up against him are violent, are dangerous, are throwing bricks, apparently. You know, as a librarian, don't you think that that in itself is a fable? And further, like, how, and I know I asked you this, but I feel like you have all the answers, How do we incentivize them to take a page out of children's books instead?
Well, that's a beautifully worded question. And we've seen this happen before. We've seen propaganda before. We've seen lies, things taken out of context or just entirely fabricated. And with AI being this unbridled influence in our media, and our media is now entertainment rather than a thing of journalistic integrity. As a information professional, I look at research. I want to dig deeper, and attempts at scientific research that need to be done on health and so many important things are just being flat out blocked by this administration. So we are not getting new, true information from the government sources we used to be able to trust. And I think that this era in American history will be marked by its misinformation campaigns. And we will look back on the history books and say, how could they have ever lied so much? It's very hard to sift through the barrage. There's so much happening that's real, but so much misinformation that I don't blame anybody who gets fooled by anything anymore. But we really need to work to check our sources and understand what fake news really means and how to assess our sources for veracity.
Well, you know, one of the reasons that The Music Man is one of my favorite movies, is because it's a perfect analogy for politics. Most politicians are con men. They take us to a place that we wouldn't go by ourselves, I think. But they do. They live in a we live in a world of hyperbole and, you know, exaggerated accomplishments. These guys go beyond that. And by the way, let me point out that while India is feeding people, our president is throwing himself a $45 million military parade in Washington, D.C., and his lovely, soulless press secretary said yesterday that he is going to react harshly to people that would assault police officers right after a few months ago, letting all the people that tried to overthrow the Capitol and actually killed a police officer in the riot, he pardoned them all. And by the way, I just found out they're offering those guys jobs at ICE. So, you know, I mean, let's put the most violent people in a position to go around and deal with our immigration problems. What's the biggest issue in Iowa? Is it immigration? Is it food security? Is it, you know, what do you see? What's the feedback you're getting from people in Iowa?
Our biggest issues, gosh, really, I think the number one issue is healthcare. I think with skyrocketing cancer rates, we're number two in the nation, but also the fastest growing for cancer. And with mental health care at an all-time low and a challenged economy, so rural hospitals are closing down, and only one-third of our counties have a labor and delivery unit, but we have some of the strictest abortion regulations in the United States. It's just a recipe for disaster. So we really, really need to fight this battle, all while, like you say, ICE is abducting people off the street. And it's we all understand that this is not about immigration status, because people are getting their visas revoked baselessly, and then they're becoming undocumented immigrants. It's not about immigration. It's about the color of these people's skin. It is about racism. And we are fighting a war against white supremacy. And this will not become the civil war that they're hoping for, because so many of us are too bonded. We understand each other too deeply, and we will fight to protect each other. So they will not get what they aim for. We will never allow it.
Well, you know, just to add to what you're saying about it being not being about immigration, but being about race, if you've noticed, the head of Homeland Security, the lady dog killer from Minnesota, is out there saying that they'll give you $1,000 if you plan to, you know, if you're in the country illegally and you want to leave, and they'll do all these nice things and you can't come back. But they say it all in English. They say it all in English because the commercials are not for the immigrants. They're for the Trump people that want to see this happen. So they make no bones about, you know, they're really, all you have to do is read between the lines to see what the motivation is. And it's great to see people like you standing up for the principles that this country was really founded on. You know, I love the fact that they often quote the Constitution, and I'd be willing to bet that most of them have never even read it, you know, because they misquote it more than, you know, it's just crazy. Over the weekend, they had Secretary Hestep was at a meeting, and he said he saw people flying the Mexican flag at these protests in Los Angeles. So he said, in America, we fly the American flag. And then they showed hundreds of clips on TV of everybody with the stars and bars at all the Trump rallies. Not American flag, but a flag that we, right, that we all know today we associate with racism. Liberty.
You know, what I think is most heartbreaking to me is the extent to which these people are being taken advantage of. Because at the end of the day, it was the Latino community that really set him a mark on top of Kamala. It was really the Latino demographic that helped him get elected. I saw protests and movements from people all over Florida, which is very Latino oriented. I have a lot of friends who live there who were sending me videos and all these things of these moms making promotional videos like Cuba for Trump, all of this BS that he made these people feel they were finally going to be heard. And then he completely destroyed their place here. And I think that's what's most disorienting to me is like, how are we not accepting that it's blatant lies? You know, they're manipulating people and they're taking advantage of people in front of our eyes. To me, we haven't been in a moment this low since the civil rights movement. We're beating people with sticks because we revoked their visa. We took away all of the freedom that we had granted them. And I think this, it's so volatile that how are citizens from other countries who immigrate here, you know, who are a huge part of this country, how are they ever going to feel stability here again? When in 4 years, everything can change and your 16-year-old son can get deported. So that was more of a rant, but you know, it's, you helped me really understand the degree to the advantage that's being taken. And, you know, moving forward, how can we stop this? Where do you see the hope in this truly? You know, what is the greatest hope for you? And like, from someone who to me right now is our idol of the movement of the moment, because I'm not seeing anyone else standing up and using their voice like you are, really. Where is their hope? You know, I search up Division USA, I search up Pain USA, a million things come up. When I searched up Hope USA, nothing came up for me on Instagram, which is a platform where a lot of people who are being brought up by this are using. So where is the hope? Do you know?
In the protests. It's in LA. For every person who's emboldened to be violent, they had violence in their hearts, and now they're taking violence outside, and they're being violent. ICE. For every person who feels emboldened to commit violence, there are so many of us emboldened to take action against it. Even us introverts over here, we might be shy, we might be scared, terrified. Oh my goodness. But suddenly, fear is irrelevant. It's time to be totally courageous, step out of line, speak up, watch ICE, and stand up against them so that we can protect each other. What the government's not doing for us, we do for each other. So I'm seeing tons of people move into these advocacy groups and these pay it forward groups and just donating and volunteering and contributing in any way, using their time, their talents, their resources, their privilege to step up. And that gives me hope because there are so many more of us than there are of them.
I'll tell you where I think the great hope lies. It lies in people like my co-host. One of the reasons I have I'm 71 years old. As much as it hurts me to say this, I'm 50 years older than my co-host, but I see that she's concerned and she's, engaged. And I have two daughters that are the same way. So I think the great hope lies in the next generation, in people like Liberty and people like 11-year-old beautiful artists. I think that's where where our great hope lies. Let me ask you, what is next for you? Do you have a primary, and are you the only Democrat running?
We are moving towards the primary. I am the only person who's announced, but it's early in the game. My election is November 3rd, 2026. So we have time on our side, but not much else advantageous to us. Last election, it was about a quarter of the seats in Iowa went uncontested directly to Republicans. And so our mission is to recruit wonderful candidates, progressive people with a good heart to step into these roles that they may not have considered before. You are good enough. If you're a professional, with a clear mind and good intentions, seriously consider running for office, because nobody's going to do it if we don't. We've got to step up and kick some of these people out of their seats that would wish harm on others.
You're absolutely right about that. And I would argue with you, you've got more than you think, because I think you're an amazing candidate. And that in itself is what, you know, in the end, makes a difference. We've seen races where people have spent millions and millions of dollars against a good candidate and lost. In my case, for example, the second person I ran about against when I got elected spent, I think, $25 for every dollar I spent, and I got 85% of the vote. So being a good candidate, that's really important. But I'm going to let Liberty Jones ask the last question, because we're running out of time. But it's, you know, been an amazing conversation, I believe. Go ahead, Liberty, close us out.
So what a true joy to have you on the show. Like, you have inspired me. I hope you're inspiring. And I know you're inspiring so many others. Thank you for coming on, firstly. And my last question to you is, you know, my mind, I honestly, we have these podcasts every week, and we interview people with the same mission, right? To make America think again. And, you know, every week we leave out of it and we're like, wow, you know, that was so interesting. We learned so much, whatever. But I never really understand if the mission is actually being moved along, you know, if people are actually thinking differently. And I have to say, the way that you're going about this, you're really inspiring people. I'm not usually like this, but I'm actually really enamored by you. I think what you're doing is excellent. I think where your head is about this is wonderful. And my question to you is, you know, how can we incentivize more people to be like that? How can we incentivize more people to want to be open-hearted and to want to help each other? And, you know, you're doing the job for me, but how can we help America think again, you know, obviously being vulnerable and all of those things, but how can we open people's hearts?
That's a really good question. And I think it really comes down to being open-hearted to them. I really am looking forward to hosting regular meals that are free. Doesn't matter if you have money or not, doesn't matter what you're wearing when you walk in, you can get a baked potato and come dress it up how you like at the baked potato bar, that sort of thing. And really getting together, everyone, reaching out to everyone with a personal invitation. You are invited regardless of your beliefs, your status, your job or lack thereof. That doesn't matter. Come hang out with us. You're welcome. You're welcome here. Everyone is. The only rule is everyone's welcome here. So if you feel unwelcoming, then that would be the only unwelcome thing. And build that community until everybody feels like they have been seen and heard and understood and loved. I think that's really how you bring people together, even against the biggest misinformation campaign the world has ever known, even against lies, even against tyranny. You can love people back into humanity. That's the goal.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end. But, and just let me add, after taking my kids to a soup kitchen for 10 years and fed women, there's no better feeling than feeding a person that's hungry. Giving food to somebody that's hungry, you'll feel better. You'll believe you go to this woman. And I would vote for India May, because India May is made for Iowa. Thanks so much for being with us today. And I hope you'll come back as your campaign progresses.
That would be great. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so wonderful to talk with you guys.
Thank you so much for being on the show. We'll see you next week. Thanks. Standing in the shadows of love.